Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Myrtle Beach studios of ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey. So glad to have everybody with us tonight, and especially the listeners of WLSC AM and FM Loris Myrtle Beach. We're really glad to have you, the Jack Murphy station up there growing into Myrtle Beach, and we're on there and we're on our usual time of midnight on Saturday night. We've got some of the greatest paranormal adventures known to man. Tonight, I think we have done ourselves proud because our guest will be Mark Sargent. First of all, I want to introduce our co-hosts tonight. As usual, we've got some sterling co-hosts and who are going to make this a lot of fun and a great big learning lesson about the flat earth. First of all, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, none other than that famous doctor, Dr. Trey Donaway. Trey, how are you doing tonight? We're so glad to have you with us.
I'm having a great day, and I didn't fall off a ladder today, so that's always a better day.
Yeah, I mean, we hope you – okay, don't fall off any ladders, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My friend, the great movie director Earl Owensby, fell off a ladder and about killed himself. So, I mean, just don't – you know, stay on those ladders, okay?
I avoided falling off today, so it's a good start.
Well, that's good. We're glad you did. And from the great state of Wisconsin, my good friend Keith Podesi. Keith, how are you doing tonight? And so glad to have you. You're filling in that important spot that is vacated by the Amazing Velvet, who's got a medical procedure in the morning, so we wish him the best. We love the Amazing Velvet, good guy, good wrestler, good father, all-around great guy and friend. So anyway, Keith, thank you for being on the show and doing so much research on the flat earth.
John, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, that's like crazy. Literally the last week, all I've been researching is flat earth. So it's an interesting topic for sure.
Well, it is. I think it's a great topic. Now, the queen of ScaryCast will be here shortly, Robin McRae. She had a few things to take care of. She's got a house full of kids. And when I say kids, her kids are in their 30s, and they brought their kids. And she is truly one of my best friends, one of the nicest people in the world. So glad to have her on here. And she'll be with us any moment, and I'll let everybody know when Robin is coming in. So tonight, we have one of the great intellects in the whole paranormal world, and that's what I've got to say about him. He's a sharp guy. He knows what he's talking about. He is the man to go to about the flat earth. Ladies and gentlemen, from Washington State, here he is, Mark Sargent. Mark, it is so good to have you here. Thank you so much for being on ScaryCast for your second trip around.
Thank you for the best intro I think I've gotten in 2 years. So thank you for that. I'm flattered.
Listen, buddy, whenever you come on our show, we let everybody know how good you are, and you really are. You were truly in the annals of ScaryCast in the 5 years we've been doing it. You were truly one of the great guests that we had. You were on back in the day when it was me, Maestro, and it was Devin Tate, and we were kind of new at all this, and you really did a massive job, and I'm so glad I was able to call you. I'm so glad that your number stayed in my phone. It was just fate. So anyway, glad to have you here. And I'm going to open up the questioning, and I'm going to scare everybody when I ask this. But, Mark, what in the hell is the flat earth? Tell us.
How dare you?
How dare me?
The flat earth, let's see, in a nutshell, means that you are not living on a tiny little rock covered with a little bit of water and a little bit of smoke, flying through an impossible universe in multiple directions, and your life means nothing because you're just this random accident, some residue left over from the Big Bang. Instead, you are living in a building, for lack of a better term, with walls and a floor and a ceiling. And it is so big and so well constructed that even our best and brightest didn't figure it out till almost 1960. That means the United States and the Soviet Union. And when they did, they decided to keep it a secret. We had nothing to do with the building of this place, but if you figure it out after, you know, several thousand years of civilization that the world isn't what you thought it was, would you tell the population? And what I figured out through a lot of research was that no, they wouldn't tell you. And I agreed with them. And I put that question out there to everybody on the internet. I said, okay, I don't think it's a globe anymore. Tell me where I went wrong. Tell me the fault in my logic. And I made a series of clues called the Flat Earth Clues. And instead of academics calling me up and or writing me and shooting me down, I had a whole bunch of subject matter experts from just about every profession you could think of, including all branches of the military. They said, yeah, it's not that crazy. Here's why. So there you go. You're living in a snow globe, a planetarium, a terrarium, a big box, and everything's an illusion. And what's outside of it, I don't know, but we didn't build it. There you go.
Sounds a little bit like The Matrix, that we didn't build, but we're in it. And, I mean, who knows about The Matrix, but it has a little bit of that flavor, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It's a combination of, like, The Matrix and Contact, you know, that movie with Jodie Foster from years ago. I thought one of the most humble lines from that movie was when she asked the alien, who looked like her father, who built it. He goes, we don't know. We didn't build it. We don't know who did. You know, they were very honest, very transparent about that. But yes, and I know your listeners are probably very sophisticated and they could probably get this, but most of the time I have to start with flat earth, but I do put a caveat in there. I say, look, if it's flat and it's enclosed, it's probably digital. It's probably virtual. But most people don't get that. I mean, come on, The Matrix is 21, going on 22 years old now. And a lot of people don't get it. It's like, oh, yeah, they remember some of the action sequences, but the concept kind of just blew right by them. So, yeah, it is probably virtual. But I have to start out with something very, very simple, and that is even our virtual worlds, doesn't matter what game you play, they all start off perfectly flat. And that, yes, I know there's mountains and valleys, but I'm saying the edges line up. So there you go. Yes, very
okay.
Matrix-y.
And now my last initial question for you is tell us, mm-hmm. You said that you wrote an article about, what was it, 12 reasons to believe the Earth is flat?
Initially it was my top five. It was a German production team that had a professor, astrophysics professor out of Georgetown University, and they said, come up with your five best scientific questions to throw at this guy. And when I did, he just folded like a card table, and that was it. The interview never aired because he didn't want to touch it. Why? Did you want to hear those five or not?
If you could, please, I think they would be very interesting to get a lively discussion from two of the best intellects that I know on the planet that are here with us. Robin will be here soon. So Trey and Kevin, get ready because I'm going to let you have at him. So tell us the five reasons that the Earth, and I can't wait.
Okay, so the five reasons, I'll give you my Reader's Digest version. I know that we don't have forever to talk about this, so, and I know you guys probably have questions and you want to get some back and forth. Okay, the five big bullet points that I threw at people. First one was the atmosphere versus the vacuum space. Which is, and that is what the vacuum. Let's say there's a second floor of your room right now, and you turn it into a vacuum chamber, and you have a valve above you, and you pop the cork on that sucker. What happens? Why does the air just rush right upstairs instead of staying in your room? And you say, well, because the vacuum beats it. And it's like, you're absolutely right, it beats it. It beats it all day long. In fact, there's nothing that can really beat the force of a vacuum. It's extremely powerful. And you can say, what's your point? My point is, when you walk outside, why is the atmosphere still here? And you say, your knee-jerk response is going to be gravity. And yeah. I say, well, you mean the same gravity that was in your room, the same gravity that could not hold in the air in your room from going upstairs? That gravity, which is right outside here, that's keeping the atmosphere on. Because don't forget, you know, if it's space, it's this amazingly powerful vacuum that's out there. There's what happens at the bleeding edge of space? I have asked scientists this for several years now, and no one can answer it. It's like, what happens when our atmosphere ends and the vacuum of space begins? What happens to that bleeding edge? Why is our atmosphere still here? No one can touch it. They end up going in circles. Next one would be long-distance photography, which is by far the most favorite. It's not my favorite, but it's the most favorite used by all flat earthers, which is the curvature of the Earth, according to mainstream science. And I know it gets a little weird with the math after 500 miles, but all photography is taken less than 500 miles, which is the curvature is 8 inches per mile per mile, otherwise known as 8 inches per mile squared. It's why ships go over the horizon. It's why everything goes off and supposedly over the horizon. And that would have been true until HD cameras came along, but now we can zoom back into frame all these boats all day long. 20 years ago, you couldn't have done it, but now you can, for a $500 camera, you can go out to any beach you want, and you can shoot lighthouses and objects that are way off there. In fact, we put the challenge out there to show me an object that's 150 miles away across a body of water. Why a body of water? Because water lays perfectly level that you can't see. Why is that happening? How is that possible? Third one would be the eclipse shadow.
So Mark, are you saying that the objects just get so terribly small?
Yeah, they just shrink off into like a single pixel, and they just disappear. And I get it. You know, you get the illusion. Of course, there's also atmospheric lensing, which will cut off the bottom and the top of objects. And we can show that with a glass of water on a perfectly flat table. You can make a flashlight actually set. But again, oh, by the way, you don't even have to shoot a boat. You can shoot the sun. If you've got a special filter on your camera, the sun supposedly sets, you know, in the distance, but nope, if you have a filter on your camera, you can pop that sucker back up, at least for a while, but eventually, again, it was the design of this world, the thickness of the atmosphere, meaning you're not looking through just nothing. What's in front of you is only about 99.9% transparent. In fact, it's 80% nitrogen and 20% oxygen. Right, and that gets thicker over time. It's why, you know, like water, when you dive, you know, the sun disappears about 200 feet because the sunlight cannot penetrate the water. Well, the air is just a thin version of that. In fact, when you're walking around, you're not even really walking; you're swimming. You're basically walking through this transparent fog that we just can't pick up with our eyes. So, anyway, we'll circle back to that. Third one would be the eclipse shadow. If you remember the eclipse from 2017, which crossed the country diagonally, I think it ended in your neck of the woods. The eclipse shadow is too small, meaning the moon is 2,000 miles wide, but the blackout zone of the moon, meaning where you have a total eclipse of the sun, is only 70 miles wide. That's a little weird, isn't it? I mean, the reduction of the shadow is 90-something percent. That's the equivalent of you walking next to a wall on a sunny day, and your shadow turns into an action figure. Never, ever happens in real life. So why is it happening with the moon? And if you come back and say, oh, the sun does the same thing, or the Earth does the same thing, I go, really? So what that means is if the Earth is 8,000 miles wide, remember, the Earth and the moon are right next to each other, that should cast a blackout zone on the moon that's, what, 250 miles wide? And we never, ever see that. Why is 70 miles important? Why does it mean anything to flat earthers? It's because we say the sun and the moon are probably about 50 miles wide. So having a 70-mile blackout shadow, that's perfectly fine for us. That works great for us. Fourth one would be the moon temperature, which I actually thought was a prank some years ago when I heard it, which is everyone knows when you're in the sun, you know, it's cooler in the shade than it is in the sun, right? So it's 90 degrees in the sun, yeah. It's 80 degrees in the shade, give or take. Well, in the moon, it's actually the opposite. As a matter of fact, it's up to 13 degrees opposite. That's impossible, meaning if it's 50 degrees in the moonlight, it's over 60 degrees in the moonshade in some cases. And how is that possible? Not only that, but if you take a magnifying glass to moonlight, you can actually make it even colder than normal moonlight. you can actually generate by a couple degrees. And it's like, oh, that doesn't prove a flat Earth. So it's like, no, but it absolutely destroys the relationship between the sun and the moon. I mean, the moon supposedly is reflecting the sun's light. Well, at the very least, it should be neutral, but it's not. You know, it should never go colder. Should never go colder by 10 degrees. And turns out there's such a thing out there in cosmetics. We've known it for some years. Any university student specializing in lasers will show you. You can actually use a laser to make cool light and just change the frequency, like dialing on a radio. And so why is that happening with the moon? Why is the moon generating this cold laser light? That's because it's independently lit. It has nothing to do with the reflection of the sun. It's its own illuminated body. Last but not least, number five would be the Van Allen radiation trap question. I'm telling you a trap in advance because you can't beat it. It's like that crane kick in Karate Kid, which is the Van Allen radiation belt. It's a simple question. Are they deadly? Yes or no? If you say they're deadly, well, then how did the Americans, and yes, I'm American, I'm not Canadian, but I got to say it like that. How did the Americans make multiple round trips through the Van Allen radiation belts without any shielding against radiation whatsoever? Remember, the only three things that can stop radiation are lead and gold and a whole bunch of water, which you use in power plants. And the Americans use none of that. They use plastic and aluminum. That doesn't stop radiation. So how did everybody not die? Nobody got radiation poisoning. Nobody got cancer. There's still five of these guys limping around today. Soon to be four, I'm sure. And if you say, okay, they are deadly, then I say, okay, then go to the NASA website, nasa.gov, and look up a wonderful little video. It's still out there. It's called Orion Trial by Fire. The Orion Project, which is the Mars program, they say, oh, yeah, by the way, we can't test any of the manned capsules because we haven't solved the radiation problem of the Van Allen belts. What are you talking about? You solved it perfectly in the 60s. Nothing went wrong, ever. Why would you ever change anything? What the hell happened? Did you forget how to make radiation shielding? Or did you not have any to begin with? And this video was made in the end of 2014. Anyway, I threw those five questions out there, and that was it. It was over. And granted, to be fair to the guy from Georgetown, you know, once you hit your master's or PhD in a specialized field, you're pretty tunnel visioned. You're not gonna make comments for a subject that you aren't comfortable with because you don't want to make whatever your specialty is look bad. But because of those five questions, I rarely get to talk to physicists at all. They just do not want to deal with it. Anyway, those are the big five questions.
I have question number six, and then I'm going to let our panel have it. By the way, is that Professor Wrestling Steve Logan on with us?
Yeah, I was on mute listening in. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to ask, if I may.
But I tell you what, I've got, Steve, I've got one more question from Mark Sargent, and then we're going to open it up to our panelists. This is Professor Wrestling Steve Logan from Pro Wrestling Interviews. Great guy. Glad he's on here. Mark, here's my question, and I asked this of my dad when we were listening to the moon communications. They were conversing in real time back and forth with Houston. Now, you know, I don't know, but I don't believe that radio waves or whatever waves you've got allow you to communicate in absolute real time like you and I are talking back and forth right now. And I asked my dad that. He said, son, I don't know. And I noticed that, and it was very strange, you know, like one of them would talk, and then here was Houston. I mean, it was just a regular old conversation, as if you were 100 miles away from each other. And father said, son, I don't know. Don't ask that question. I said, okay, I won't. But that has bothered me my entire life, is that I don't think radio waves can allow for a back and forth real time conversation. I don't think they can.
Well,
now, I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, tell me.
No. You're not wrong. I mean, if we'll just ballpark it, let's say it's 240,000 miles to the moon, even though there's a wonderful documentary called Room 237, because some people say it's 237,000 miles. Honestly, if you look up online, you'll see like 10 different numbers, but it's roughly between, if you believe mainstream, between 230 and 250,000 miles. Now, the bigger problem there isn't the radio waves themselves, it was the booster on the moon side. Because you can look, and again, it's because it's on television. We have conditioned people. If it's on TV, it's got to be real. And if it's on the news, it's absolutely and objectively true. The new No News Corporation, which is owned by parent corporations, which are owned by bigger parent corporations, they would never be biased in any way, shape, or form, and they would never work for the state in any way, shape, or form. But the satellite dish that was up there in 1969, it was a standard VHF transmitter. We're not talking about dish network or anything or satellite anything nowadays from present day. We're talking about 1969 VHF transmitter. This thing ran off a car battery. It's not classified technology. On a good day, that thing had a range of maybe 50 miles. Maybe. And yet this thing was broadcasting 10 frames of color video a second and perfect two-way communication, not to mention, what are you lining it up with? And I know there's some people say, whoa, a lot of Americans don't know. It's like, well, it's the capsule that was in geosynchronous orbit above the moon, and it was bouncing off that, and that had all the booster power. It's like, okay, so you're hitting a moving target above you, which is in then turning around and hitting a moving target away, and still, what is that lining up with? What analog technology are you using to do the broadcast? It was absolutely ludicrous. In fact, the one of the most famous shots when the capsule thing was blowing off the moon and sailing upwards, which is like, okay, with what thrust technology? I don't care if it was 1/6 Earth gravity or not. And the camera was tilting perfectly with pan or tilt. It was tilting perfectly upward. It was tracking it absolutely perfect. And they said many times, like, oh, yeah, we had like an 8-second delay on that remote camera. And it's like, so how'd you nail it perfectly? And they go, oh, we just got lucky. It's like, yeah, of course you did. Of course you got lucky. And, again, the American – I've asked people this outside the country. I said, look, I get why all the Americans believe it, right? Go rah-rah, wave the flag. But why would anyone outside of the United States, why do you believe the Americans? And they all told me the same thing. It's like, well, because it was on TV. And my last comment on that was Dana Perino, if you know her from Fox News. She had a great quote because she was asked about the whole faking of the moon mission thing. And her quote it haunts me, which is she goes, I believe in the moon landings because I'm a patriot. Translated means, if the state says that we did something, we did it. She will never, of course she's not going to question the state. She used to be the press secretary for one of the Bushes. But yeah, a lot of other people, they just, again, because it was on TV and because of the news, they sorry, last thing I swear on this, which is anyone that questions, like, there's no such thing as fake news, right? We all know this. Everyone says there's no such thing as fake news. And I go, great. So everything on CNN is absolutely true, and everything on Fox News is absolutely true. Depending on what team you play for, red team or blue team, you can't resolve both those statements because you absolutely believe the opposite in one of those cases. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. In the following order, Dr. Trey Donaway, Professor Wrestling, and Keith ask our first round of questions.
Yeah,
Trey, what you got?
It's a fascinating premise you have. I disagree with you.
I wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah,
if you didn't disagree
with
me, I would be worried.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of science to back up the presumption that the Earth is spherical. And that science reaches back to the days of the Egyptians when the proponents of a spherical Earth were first put forward. And nothing in our space technology, I understand the patriotism angle for the for a faked moon landing, but, China is on the moon. China's on Mars. We have we have a station from a robot on Mars. I think we've gone well beyond the Earth as just one of many planets. And, you know, while you ask questions that I would have to be an expert at philosophy or at physics, which I'm not, I think there probably are people that could have an answer for that. I don't know who those people would be, but I'm not sure if I find your arguments compelling enough to make me change my perspective.
Yeah, and I get that. And again, I couldn't. One of the flaws in Flat Earth, which I tell anyone that wants to get into this, is like, look, I'm not going to be able to change your mind during a radio show. That's just not going to happen. I tell people, look, I'm not going to convince you. I may not even persuade you. I'm just going to put the idea in your head. However, there's a caveat to that, which is if you have a master's degree or higher in anything, really, but especially if you have a master's degree in any sort of physical science, there's nothing I can do. It's over at that point. If you scored high in, you know, the science areas of the SAT, again, there's not much I can do. But look, I mean, the stuff you're rattling off.
But when you say that, that would imply that having a higher education makes it impossible to accept the premises you put forward. Is that correct?
Yep, absolutely. No question. Well, I mean, come on, it's classic conditioning. If you are told, especially if you go into astrophysics or astronomy, if you have a master's degree in astronomy, there's no even point in talking to me. Because you 100% believe without a question of a doubt that every astronomy book that you read or that it was based, you know, that was stacked on top of each other, the, you know, the foundations below, is absolutely objectively true, which is fine. Again, that's just the nature of things. However, I'm not trying to, you know, be smartass in any way. It's like, look, the chess club and the math club and the audiovisual clubs, those are pretty small clubs. I go after the general public. And the general public, as you know, when they get out of school, they're lucky if they can drive. Most of them remember nothing about physics or biology or chemistry or anything.
That's probably a true statement.
Well, yeah. You're being nice. You know,
but when
full
you,
well,
when you
most,
take
most,
yes, and I'm going to continue to be nice because there's no reason for me not to be nice. However, you know, when you have people that have flown in an SST, and they see the curvature of the Earth, how do you explain the curvature of the Earth where things roll into view while you're observing a curved planet, and they roll into view as you go around that planet, and which again is another argument for the sphericity of the planet. Yeah. How would you explain that observation that's made by people that it does, regardless of their schooling, if they got a ride in that aircraft at that altitude, that's what they observed. How do you explain?
Are we talking about the SST? That's the Blackbird.
No. I'm talking about the private the British Airway jet.
Oh, the Concorde.
No. They stopped flying it because they had a wreck on a runway. But
Right. Okay. So,
but
yeah,
before
that
happened, my father-in-law was on one of those flights, and he could see the curvature of the Earth from his observation.
Got it. Okay. I know it's a radio show, so I can't show a video on this. Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? Without a question, the most famous scientist in the world, whether you like him
now,
or not.
Now, what was his name?
That you don't know Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of worries me. Neil Tyson, tall black guy, mustache.
Energetic black guy scientist.
I didn't hear the name, but it doesn't pop up as the most famous scientist in the world. From my perspective, but that's okay.
Lets me know that you're more of a serious scientist, because there's only three media scientists in the world. Neil deGrasse Tyson from the United States, Brian Cox from the UK, and Michi Okaku from Japan. And I'm not going to throw in Bill Nye because that's just an insult because he's not a scientist at all. He's just an actor from Seattle. I should know I'm from Seattle. But the fact that he just keeps getting put on panels, it's like, oh, let's put him on the Mars rover panel. Why? Because the general public thinks, because he had his own, you know, Bill Nye the Science Guy thing, that he's an authority on science. Oh, my God, he's got a bachelor's degree in mechanical, and he abandoned it immediately for acting. Whole other story for another time. Neil deGrasse Tyson goes on stage. All he does is do lectures. And he said on stage, because they were asking him about the Red Bull jump. Forget about the Concorde. But that's small potatoes. But we'll talk about your father's comment in a second here, which is the Red Bull jump from a couple years ago, right? Red Bull, for a big PR stunt, they take a guy up in a big balloon to 130,000 feet, which is above the Concorde, is above spy planes, at least the normal version of spy planes. And they shoot the shot, right, and they use a huge wide-angle lens, and the curvature Earth was just massive at 130,000 feet. Well, if that's the case, and Neil goes, that's completely scientifically dishonest. He goes, you can't see the curvature from 130,000 feet. Well, why have I talked to people that have been on airplanes all day long that have said they've seen the curvature? Why have I talked to people that say they've seen the curvature on the beach? Hey, hang on 1 second. There's an automatic vacuum that's going off. I have to shut this thing off. Give me 1 second. Right back, okay? Don't move.
Yeah,
I've been waiting. He will be back. I know he will.
Sorry, I'm back.
Hi, everybody.
Back.
Hey, Robin, okay. How you doing?
Good. How's everybody doing?
Great. We've got Mark Sargent, and we're answering some questions for Trey. All right, Mark, please continue, sir.
Okay, sorry, real quick. So there was an automatic vacuum that was going to make a whole bunch of noise, and I had to shut it down. Okay, so if Neil deGrasse Tyson comes on stage and he says, look, you can't see the curvature there from 130,000 feet, then what is everybody seeing? Why? And he's very, very confident about that. Sorry about the noise in the background. Hopefully it's not deafening. Probably it probably sounds like an airplane.
Can't hear it.
It'll be off in 5 seconds or three. Okay. So it's very Orwellian in that it's not that you see the curve, it's that you want to see the curve. There's a big, big difference, and that is the whole five lights, four light things. That is, you're told about the curve over and over and over and over and over again. If you show them the globe in your classroom since you were 6 years old, what do you think? You want to see it. And I've had people say, oh, yeah, no, I've seen the curvature from the beach. I've seen it from a mountain. I've seen it from a balloon. And it's like, when then the most famous scientists, I know that serious scientists don't see him as that, but look, he represents you, all of you. He says you can't see it. Absolutely adamant about it. So who's wrong here? Is he absolutely wrong? I don't think so. And I've talked to a whole bunch of pilots and said the same thing. It's like, look, out of the front of the cockpit, it's absolutely flat. I have a list of them, just about every airline thing you could think of, including military. And they said, we know it's supposedly curved, but we don't see it. We never, ever see it. And all the military guys say, oh, yeah, by the way, we also don't factor it into our firing solutions, ever. We do not factor in the Coriolis effect or the curvature. Sorry. So anyway, I'm not calling your father a liar. I'm just saying, look, he saw what he wanted to see. Power of suggestion.
Well, from what I understand is you need to get about 35,000 feet in order to see the curvature in the daytime. And most aircraft don't fly with 35,000 feet. They fly below that. But now the SST would have flown above that, so that would be a different platform you're looking at.
Sure.
When you're looking at Mr. Branson's recent foray into space, when they publish a photograph showing curvature of the Earth, I don't know if they will. I think they might. We're not talking about a government claiming they've done one thing or another. We're talking about a billionaire who decided to go into space. And Jeff Bezos is the next one, another billionaire going into space. and it just seems kind of a waste of time and money if you have all these people spending a lot of money to go into space, if space is an illusion of sorts, because we have a flat Earth.
Well, yeah, I would disagree with
you. But I mean, it's their money. They can spend it on whatever they want, more power to them.
Of course.
But,
and the government spends even more money to do the same thing. Remember,
I understand from the perspective of the government, that might be a great, it might be a great propaganda tool. So let's spend a lot of money on that. But I'm talking about people that earn their money the hard way, and yet they're still willing to spend money on some form of space exploration, which definitely puts you above 35,000 feet.
We're also saying,
hey, I got something to add to this.
Mm.
So according to what I've heard, Jeff Bezos actually got a $10 billion grant from the government to go into space. So it wasn't really his individual money that he was using. It was a grant from the government to sponsor it.
Sure. The government would have a vested interest in keeping this. Again, for the government's sake, it's only time and money. And it started out fairly small again back in 1960, and then they just kept it going and escalated as we went along. Heck, even before the Bezos and the Virgin Galactic thing, Branson, look at Elon Musk with the whole Tesla Roadster in space, which is one of the most ridiculous things ever. And I have talked to producers that said, oh, yeah, the photography was way over the top. And I go, so why'd you show it? They go, well, they were really striking images. I go, you don't believe? It's like, no, but we don't have to. Look, if the public watches it and the public, you know, if it helps pay to get our sponsors, then that's what we're going to use. The Tesla Roadster, which was just a stock supposedly convertible out of his garage, should have been torn to shreds. Not just from the G-forces, but the temperature changes. I mean, those side windows should have spider-webbed. All the pressurized systems from the vacuum should have exploded. And I know it wasn't a gas car. It was an electric car. But there were still pressurized liquid systems. I mean, the dash should have warped. The thing didn't make any sense. The tires alone should have detonated like bombs and blown the fiberglass to bits. That car was absolutely pristine. And, you know, they got the Earth circling around the background at whatever orbit it was. And it's like, oh, we're heading off to Mars. They cut the feed. It's like, why did you cut the feed? We want something that no one's ever shown, by the way, in the history of space travel, which is show us a camera image pointing down at the ground. And as the rocket's lifting off, eventually the ground is going to morph into a ball. And this little ball, as this thing leaves orbit, it's never happened in the history of space travel. Statistically, it's not impossible, but extremely unlikely. So anyway, the Red Bull jump, 130,000 feet, Tesla Roadster in space, God knows how many miles, and it was supposedly out there. No, I don't buy it for a second. It's always the same narrative, which is you are on a globe. You are on a globe. Doesn't matter what space story they're putting out there. Oh, the red spot on Jupiter is acting weird because you're on a globe. Reclassifying Pluto, you're on a globe. Weird thing on top of Saturn, on and on and on. All they care about is making sure you think you're on a globe. And by the way, the dome, if we're in this box, the ceiling isn't at 30,000 feet. Could be up 1,000 miles, 2,000 miles, which is shallow compared to the width of it. Sorry, I rambled.
You did a good job.
Yeah.
What?
Sure. Yes, Professor.
I had a few questions. Can you briefly go into the Antarctica theories? Like, I've heard that it's kind of forbidden to explore without permission.
Yeah. The Antarctica is, by the way, one of the things that most people, they get hooked on flat Earth because of long-distance photography. For me, it was Antarctica, which was when I was looking into the Antarctic Treaty, which I got a PDF copy. You know, you can find it all over. I've got a PDF copy on my machine here, where after the United States military was down there doing just looking around, basically exploring from 1927, 28 until 1955, 56 with Operation Deep Freeze. And then right after Operation Deep Freeze, whatever they found, which I think was the beginning of the outer border, you know, how many thousands of miles inland, they came up with the Antarctic Treaty, which says no corporation from any country can ever set up shop in Antarctica, ever, for the end of time. And whatever country comes online, if you have a country and you become this economic power, they put this thing in front of you. It says, oh, yeah, by the way, you can't set up shop in Antarctica. For how long? Forever. It's, what are you talking about? The United States came back and went off on television, Admiral Byrd, and said the place is made out of money. This entire mountain range made out of coal. There's uranium. There's oil. There's gas. All sorts of stuff. Why aren't we down there? They couldn't have got off the ice fast enough. And the Antarctic Treaty is bulletproof. It's not even, it's the only unbroken treaty in the history of treaties. It's not even up for review until 2041. And that's all she wrote. And I know some people say, well, it's because of environmental reasons. Like, really? There's no indigenous plant life, animal life, unless you want to count the penguins on the coast, and I don't. No ruins, no previous civilizations as far as we know, and it's locked down. It's a no-go zone. The only people that are down there are the military and military scientists in bases that we're never going to see anytime soon. Sorry. So that's oh yeah, sorry, and the compasses don't do anything down there. I've talked to a whole bunch of Southern Hemisphere military people, which is like the compass should dominate south at some point, should dominate south when you get to a certain point. And in Antarctica, everyone says the compass is worthless. We don't know why. I hear that more often than not. We don't know. Don't know why. Is that going to help?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that is one of the more interesting points of the theories I've heard. But can you could you possibly debunk some of the comments, the theories I've heard about hollow Earth and oblong shaped Earth? Go into that?
Yeah. Hollow Earth was actually something I got into before. I found Flat Earth because of hollow Earth. I looked into it. I was kind of a fan of the whole, because the military builds deep underground bases, you know, underground military bunkers, otherwise known as DUM. I would have picked a different acronym, but whatever. So we build them. So the question is, can you build a really, really, really big one? And if you do, can you put an entire civilization in it? And I thought that would be really interesting. And when you look into Hollow Earth long enough, eventually you run into the youngest admiral in the history of the Navy, Admiral Byrd, Richard E. Byrd. And when you look at him, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, he supposedly took this rickety flight up to the North Pole, supposedly in the mid-20s. And suppose, you know, the secret diary whispers, you know, it's more myth than anything, where he supposedly was a journey to the center of the earth type thing. It's like, wow, one would think he would just keep going up there. But no, they reassigned him to the Antarctic, and he was the guy. He was the lead on, he just kept flying around and around and around Antarctica, looking for something. They took a break during World War II, sidebar. All the countries were off the ice in World War II except for one, and that was Nazi Germany. Weird, but makes sense. Indiana Jones wasn't just a movie after all. The Germans were willing to do anything to win. And so, look, if Harry Potter's wand was somewhere on the ice, they were going to go look for it. And, you know, look up something called Operation High Jump, which was right after the surrender of the Japanese. And anyway, so is Hollow Earth – I'm not debunking Hollow Earth in any way, shape, or form, because Hollow Earth does not need much space. In fact, Hollow Earth dovetails perfectly into Flat Earth. Think about this. Our civilization, the majority of our civilization lives between sea level and 1 mile up, what, 5,000, 6,000 feet. That's the bulk of our civilization. And everything, you know, so we don't need much. I mean, think about it. Commercial airlines cap out at about 10 miles. We never make 10 miles. Spy planes, 20 miles, or give or take. You don't need much of a chamber to hold an entire civilization. As a matter of fact, who's to say that this world that we're living in isn't just inside one big chamber, which is kind of a different version of Flat Earth? So, no, I can't debunk Hollow Earth at all. As far as oblong Earth or concave Earth or anything like that, concave really doesn't do anything for me. I've never really seen anything even remotely close to the optics that help concave Earth. Hopefully that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, I've only seen just comments briefly. I haven't delved into flat and hollow and oblong, but I've seen like just passing comments, and it was kind of interesting. Just I hadn't heard that those other theories.
I mean, the The concave Earth, by the way, is just kind of a shallow version of a Dyson sphere, which, you know, some people in astronomy or in sci-fi especially have talked about. It was even Star Trek a couple different times, about making a sphere that's so big that you create a civilization on the inside of it. Kind of like a hollowed-out Death Star, but that's a whole other discussion for another time. Anyway, what else you got?
That was mostly it. I was really just interested in some of the comments I've heard about Antarctica. But Dr. John, I'll let you have it.
Let me throw one more.
All right, now Keith, when I called you up tonight at 8:30, you said, John, the Earth is flat. Explain.
I did, yeah. Because it is, yeah. So, I'll ask the pro, because it sounds like you're a lot more educated in this than I am. But
I don't know about that.
I mean, I heard about it about 6 years ago. I did some research on it, and
yeah.
I told my family the Earth is flat, and they all thought I was crazy. And then I did some more research into it, and then I was like, you know what, maybe I'm wrong. And then literally about a couple of months ago, I started digging into it again. And then yesterday, I said, you know what, the Earth is flat, and we've been lied to. So can you explain, like, what's actually happening when they're doing the rocket ship launches?
Oh, sure. Think about it this way. The space program, if you got to put yourself in the other guy's shoes, which is, okay, why do you fake a space program? In fact, that really bugged me about the Apollo mission, because I was always a skeptic of Apollo years before. A lot of people were. A lot of nerds were. Because nothing made sense. The Apollo, there were too many inconsistencies, and the none of the physics matched up. And I always thought, it's like, okay, so why fake the moon mission? You know, I get it, you know, rah, rah, wave the flag. But it's a good reason, but it's not a great reason. And then once you get into flat Earth, you understand, it's like, oh, I get it. You have to fake the space program. Because if you don't, eventually what happens is the military contractors start getting involved. You have to control it. You have to militarize space. The last thing you want is like someone like General Dynamics or Boeing or McDonnell Douglas or something like that get into it, you know, tag team up with somebody that wants to make a brand for themselves, like, let's say, Frito-Lay. Frito-Lay and Boeing get together. They're going to do a space thing because Frito-Lay wants to put a flag on the moon. You don't want that, which is why you delay the Blue Horizon and the Virgin Galactic and the SpaceX thing as long as humanly possible. And then when they finally get off the ground, you just infiltrate it. I mean, they got to get their engineers from somewhere. Where do you think they're recruiting from? Almost all of them are going to be military, except for the new guys. So anyway, as far as rockets go, dump them off into the ocean. The big thing, if you want to look into it, I'm talking to the listeners here, is, you know, look up time-lapse rocket launch, you know, at night, you know, where the rocket, you know, they all do the same thing. They arc over and go horizontal almost immediately and go off somewhere, but we don't really care, which is why the great independent movie from the late 70s, I just pulled a blank on this, Capricorn 1. Which is why it's all about the telemetry guys. And I know some people would say, well, all of NASA can't be in on it. It's too big a secret. And it's going, look, this is not like the Manhattan Project, where we're building, you know, refining uranium in three different parts around the country and, you know, building the atomic weapon. And we kept it a secret, and there was like 100,000 people involved. This isn't that. This is the opposite. You can have everybody else doing their natural stuff. You know, the guy that polishes the fuel systems, designs the mirrors, and scrubs the floors, and serves at the cafeteria at NASA, they don't know anything. They don't. 99% of the people that they're at NASA, they don't know crap. They don't have to. Why would you tell them? It's compartmentalization. It's what we do in the military all along. It's like, it's above your pay grade. You don't make enough to know the real deal. The guys that do need to know, though, are the telemetry guys. And if you telemetry, for those of you who don't know what that is the coordinates in 3D space of where the rocket is, especially once it goes out of visual range. And you've seen this in movies all the time. People, once you're looking at binoculars, like, where is it? You look at the telemetry guys, and it's like, well, it's 100 miles south by southeast over the blah, blah, Indian Ocean. Well, you got to take their word for it, because that's the guys. It's just data that they're looking at. And if you don't think data can be faked, come on, we fake stuff all the time. It's America. We come up with the best things ever. And Sorry, last but not least, a little quote from you, because, again, I don't want to ramble too much, is the quote from FDR, one of our older presidents, who said, only tell the people as much truth as they can handle. And that's the case. Like, look, you don't – if you found out – and I put this to any of you. Hey, look, if you found out in 1960 that the Earth wasn't what you thought it was, right, and you sat down at a meeting, you know, X-Files smoking man meeting, a lot of powerful people around a table – would you speak up and say, oh, yeah, the public has a right to know? Yeah, the civilization's already been built. You know, the powers that be, they don't take chances like that. You don't – if there's a 5% chance that people are going to run through the streets with pitchforks and torches, you don't tell them. You tell them something else. You make up something. You spin it in a whole other direction. Oh, eventually you may tell them. But it's the standard line, which is we'll tell them when we figure out a nice way to introduce it to the public, when we can control the narrative. Well, now, you know, we have 6 billion smartphones in the world. More people have smartphones than they have running water. We can spin any narrative that we want, and they'll buy it. Anyway, there you go.
Okay.
This is Trey again. What would prevent the government from saying that you know, all this previous 350 years of science is wrong, the Earth is flat, would that turn the world into a tailspin? Would that bring doom, destruction, disorder, chaos? What would be the end result of that?
And it's a great question. And that question, I would have loved to have you had been in that secret, well, it's just called the Illuminati meeting. You're at the Illuminati table, and you just throw that one out there. It's like, what's the worst that could happen? And somebody at the end of the table says something like this. It's like, well, first, it's a three-pronged thing. First is academics. Astronomy and astrophysics, that basically shuts down until we can figure out what to do with it. And the remaining physical sciences, archaeology, biology, hydrology, geology, anything with an ology, those have to be retooled from the ground up. No play on words there. And you have to do that in every university in every country simultaneously. That is an academic nightmare. I mean, you have to empty libraries and rebuild them. And what do you do in the meantime? I mean, you have people writing books as fast as they can. You don't know what's going on. It's chaos. That's just academia. World markets, economics, you would have to shut down world markets for months. Just shut them down. You don't know what it means. I mean, our markets react to anything. A world leader catches a flu. Somebody changes the price of a barrel of oil by 10. Everything just goes these wild swings. I mean, it's like driving on an icy road. We're talking about potentially turning the steering wheel drastically in one direction or the other. But the big one, I know some people probably don't want to hear it, but it's got to be said, which is the religious angle. You're talking about the big five religious houses of this world, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. You're giving them all leverage against science simultaneously, and you're telling them to show restraint? That's not going to go well. I mean, remember, they're all in competition as it is. These guys, these groups would come straight at science, and they would say, okay, so you were wrong about something really, really big. What else were you wrong about? I don't know. Let's look at evolution, carbon dating, the Big Bang, dark matter, and it just goes on and on and on. It would never end. Between those three things, that's one of the – it's a very short Illuminati meeting. You just sit there.
Well,
like,
you know, you say that. However, if you look at the timeline of atomic models, I mean, we started off with John Dalton's billiard ball model, and then it went to Tom Tomlinson's plum pudding model, and then the planetary model, and then the Bohr model, and now we're on the electron cloud model. So, yep. You know, our models change. It hasn't created disruption. It's created more of a convergence of a refinement of thought. So if we were to decide that it is a refinement of thought to go against everything that the scientific community has believed in 350 years about the Earth being a sphere, right, it would still be a refinement and a move in the right direction. So I disagree with you in the respect that the the scientific, the educated community can't change their mind on things because
they can't.
They do.
I agree.
Depending on evidence.
I agree with you now, but remember, this isn't now. This is then. So now you're absolutely right. In 1960, were we ready? No, we were not ready. I mean, come on. The Roswell thing, which was only 13 years earlier, that was already starting to cascade into something horrible. You know, there were papers and radio stations just losing their minds out there. Remember, television really wasn't a big thing in 1947. And they were just losing it to where the Pentagon, it's like, what the heck happened? They couldn't control anything. You know, they had to call back up the base. It's like, look, we got to backpedal in a hurry on this. So in 1960, was the public ready for this sort of news? No. 2020, or back when we were doing this, 2015, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think they are open-minded enough to where I think the general public can go, we put it out there. We've been doing this. I've been doing this now for 6 years, and the public has absorbed it pretty well. You know, I've talked to a whole bunch of people, been interviewed a whole bunch of times, and it's not causing the panic. In fact, I was the guy that predicted 6 years ago. I said there's going to be this 1% of the population is going to totally freak out about this. And, of course, it was just a guess. But it never, ever happened. And so, yeah, I think maybe now it's has the potential to be out there and nobody burns anything down. So I agree with you.
Time
okay.
for the big reveal. It's time for all
well,
the astrophysicists to fess up to the fact that...
No. Not astrophysicists don't tell. Why would you tell astrophysicists? That would just upset people. You'd have to tell them though, but yeah, no, I gotcha. No, by the way, that's let me throw one more thing out there, which is, do any scientists know about this? No, even if they did, you can't. I mean, you know full well when you reach a certain level of academia, all you care about is your peer groups and being published. That's it. The word ostracized is probably one of the most scariest words ever in academia. You never want social disapproval from your peer groups. And so, no, nobody's broken ranks. Red Rover has never happened when it comes to who I've talked to in that community.
Interesting. This is Dr. John. It is now time to bring Robin McCray on. Robin, first of all, we're so glad you came. You were able to make it with us tonight, and you know the topic is the flat Earth, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I came in. I had a situation here. I came in the middle of it, so I wasn't able to hear everything. I apologize.
Well, no, that's okay. I want to ask you two questions, and these are magnificent questions for this discussion. Number one, when I was putting together my book, Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, I told you that I had read a book by Ingo Swann, The Great Remote Viewer, that said the moon was hollow. Okay? So I came over to your house.
Correct.
And we talked about the moon being hollow. I said, that's what he says. And he says, in a similar manner, the Earth is hollow. Mark, this is going to come directly back right at you. And so
okay.
I said, Robin, describe how the moon is hollow. And I made sure that Robin didn't know what the question was. So Robin described a structure where there were gigantic caverns. And were there...
Pardon?
Yeah, you're breaking up.
You're breaking up really bad.
I'm sorry.
I can't hear him.
Described that there were giant caverns underneath the surface
sorry,
of the moon.
Sorry, I can't understand anything you're saying. I'm sorry.
Really?
It's all broken up.
Gigantic cavern in underneath the surface of the moon or surface of the Earth? Surface of the moon?
You're talking about the surface of the moon. Now I'm gonna go outside. Is that any better, Robin?
Yeah, that is better.
Yes. No, okay,
good.
Now what were you saying, John?
I was saying that we discussed how the moon had gigantic hollow caverns, right?
Inside the moon?
Yes. And how you saw a variety of civilizations in there. And so what I then told you is in 2007, there were some lunar probes that went around the moon, and they actually found those caverns, those gigantic caverns that were that
I remember we even drew a map. Do you remember?
Right. And what happened
and
is those gigantic caverns became very much what Ingo Swann had, the psychic, had said were there. And he had even said that they're the same thing on the Earth, that we have gigantic caverns, much like what the Hollow Earth guys say. So, number one, we proved, you independently proved a research result from 2007. And I never told you about it until after you told me all about those gigantic caverns. Well, okay, now I'm going to ask you the big question. Because we have a lot of confidence in some of the things that you say. And so what is your take? And I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but
because I only heard half of this. Oh, no.
It doesn't matter what you heard. What I wanted to ask you is what image do you get about a flat Earth? What do you think? Do you get the image of a sphere, or do you get an image of a flat landscape? What do you get? I mean, you're basically our best resource.
No, I don't know about that, but the thing is with me, like, I've thought about this. I mean, people have talked about it for years, and I don't discredit anybody's opinion because we really don't have any accurate way of knowing it. Now, I know when I did the remote viewing and when I've had to deal with some of the ETs that are in inner Earth, I mean, at that point in time, it's just this mass down there, and it's got the tunnels, and it's got chambers, and it's got all these things. Now, if you are talking about a sphere-shaped planet, it would have to be extremely thick, which it probably is because the Earth is huge. So, I mean, you could still get all those things in it. I have a hard time with two things. Number one, it's hard for me to say that it's sphere-shaped because my own personal thing is I really haven't got anything to go on with that. But I also do know one thing, and I mean no disrespect to anybody on this, but we have been lied to so badly from our government from the get-go, and then they always show us the pictures of the Earth, and it's circular. And I'm not going to say that it's not, but I can't believe anything they say. As far as I'm concerned, my government has no credibility in my mind because, as we all know, I deal with a different part of the government. Not, I mean, I have my children were all military kids. I have the utmost respect for that and what they fought for our country. But when it comes down to some of these other types of government in our system, you know, I've had the phone taps. I've had the harassment. I've had my bank accounts frozen. I've done all that. I don't have a lot of positive things to say about them because of the lies that have been told and the lies that I know are not true. As Trey knows and John knows, I deal with a lot of the paranormal. I deal with all the cryptids. I have since I was a toddler. And so we have been lied repeatedly to, and I agree exactly with what he says, you know, as far as why they're not doing it. If they can't handle it, you don't tell them the information. And I do agree with that to a certain point. But it's now gotten to the point that there is enough things that are visiting our planet and that were created to live on our planet, not only by the government but by the ETs, that whether people can handle it or not, there's going to have to be some kind of disclosure for everybody's own personal safety. And not all of them are bad. You know, and a lot of stuff that's here is not bad. They're just not like us. So, you know, I get a lot of conflicting things from there. I know, like, when you look up at the moon, it looks like it's a complete round globe. But yet, when I did the remote viewing of the moon, and you can't see it, you know, from here, it's not just a round object. I mean, there's hills, there's bumps, and you can't see that from here. So I can't, in all good conscience, say that I know with 100% clarity that it is not spear-shaped. I've not found anything that would indicate that, but I also haven't had the resources to be able to prove that it's round. And if our government is telling us that it's round, I tend to believe it's probably not, just because of what I've witnessed in my lifetime. They don't have a lot of credibility as far as being honest for me. So I think it's entirely possible. I don't think there's any way for us to know 100%. When you look at what they show you, you know, from the space stations and the pictures, it always looks round, but we don't know if those have been falsified, because a lot of things have. You know, when I have done the remote viewing as far as the chambers and the tunnels and all the things that are inner Earth, you know, I look at it and I see all these things, but then it's almost like I'm inside the Earth when I see them. I'm not away from the Earth seeing the shape of it, if that makes any sense.
Okay. All right. So basically,
so I guess I'm not really much help, because, you know,
Robin, that was a lot of help. No,
no,
I'll tell you why. Yeah, Mark, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I said no, Robin, that was a great answer and an honest answer. Would you like, look, if you're skeptical, people don't fully get it. It's like, look, if the governments do, look, there's all sorts of deceptions in this world. It doesn't even have to be the government. Look, we all know that there's all sorts of...
100%.
Yeah, I mean, there's lies in business and politics and sports and entertainment and, yes, even journalism and science. People lie to protect their own interests, and nobody protects it better than the government.
Absolutely.
There's a wonderful saying, men in power rarely give it up voluntarily. And, you know, and the United States is notorious for it. We always like to paint ourselves as the white hats, even though, you know, full well, we got to where we were from not being the white hat. And again, the line from Roosevelt where he said, look, only tell the people as much truth as they can handle. And you got to be really, really careful, because the public can turn on you. The mob is a dangerous, dangerous thing on a macro scale. So, yeah, no, I totally understand her answer.
I understand the distrust of government in general, but the proof from, I mean, you can go to Eratosthenes, who figured out by looking down wells and seeing where the sun was in relative time, knowing the distance between the locations, and then he did some trigonometry and figured out that the answer for the circumference of the Earth was in the right ballpark. So this predates our government. A lot of the proof predates governments.
So
thousands of years with different ways to measure, to evaluate, before the United States was even a twinkle in the colonists' eyes, we got kind of a long history of people doing very simple experiments showing that the Earth is spherical rather than flat.
But all the old cultures, and I know we'll get to the Greeks in a second, they all drew the same thing. They all drew the same snow globe. I'm looking at one of the montages right near. The Navajo, the Babylonian, the Mace, the Japanese, the Persians, the Vikings, the Indians, the Mayans, the Incans, Hebrews, Chinese, Celtics, Africa, we just go on and on and on. They all drew the same thing. And as far as the sticks and shadows argument goes, no, it's not going to save you in this case, because sticks and shadows works just the same if the object is very, very small and very, very close when it comes to the sun. So you can do this with a shadow and a pencil on the floor. Whereas, yeah, if the sun is 400,000 miles wide and 200 and what is it? How many miles away? 90 million miles? 93 million miles away? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or if the sun is, let's say, 50 miles wide and only 3,000 miles away, works out the same. There's a big assumption being made there. Oh yeah, you can probably guess the circumference of the Earth, but where are you? What are you basing the circumference of the sun on? See what I mean? So Again,
no,
the Greeks, I know you could say that for thousands of years they proved this, and yet all these cultures, I'm staring at all the graphics, all the crude drawings, they all drew the same thing. Because what they saw was, when you're looking, again, you can look this up online, when you're looking at a time lapse of stars moving in the sky, what's moving? Are the stars moving, or are we moving?
I've often wondered about that.
Yeah, human beings are notoriously bad at perspective. The simple experiment of when you're in traffic, stop and go traffic, and all of a sudden you zone out for a second, and you see the car next to you moving, and you don't know if you let your foot off the gas or if he's moving or what's happening. You can do the same thing on a train and a plane. There's a study done years ago where they put people in like these little wooden cars, and they either move the wall in front of them or they move the car very, very slowly. Nobody could tell anything. It's why simulators work so well on us, extremely well. It's why people get sick by just watching a roller coaster on a television or playing a video game like Mario Kart. But anyway, I totally get your opinion, and look, I know what side of the fence you're coming from. Totally get it, and I've heard the arguments. These are my rebuttals.
Yep, I imagine you have.
Well, like you said, it's not that I don't believe it's possible that the Earth is flat, because especially in the field that I work in, I believe all things are possible. I would never say to anybody that believed it was flat, I would never go up to somebody and say they're wrong, because I don't have the capability. I mean, I can remote view it, but even when I remote view it, you know, this perfect little round globe that we have been led to believe, when I look at it, that's not what I get.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily get a sphere, but because of all the bumps and the hills and I mean, it's just not this smooth little sphere.
Here's one for you. When you go to a planetarium, I know this dates me. I don't know if you guys have been to a planetarium recently.
Oh, yeah.
But if you go there and you see Jupiter, right? I've had people come at me because they say, well, does that mean all the other planets are flat? I'm going, no, it just means they're not what you think they are. If you go to a planetarium, you see Jupiter. It's like, yeah, can you see Jupiter? Yep. Can you see it with binoculars? Yep. Looks even clearer. Can you land on it? No. Why not? Because it's just an image on the ceiling. And I say, okay, when you walk outside of this building, who's to say you're just not walking into a much, much bigger building? And to take it one step further, if you grab somebody that's never seen a planetarium, it doesn't even have to be somebody from time travel from 200 years ago. Just grab an Amish person, like a pure Amish person that was born in the community, has never seen anything. You bring him in that building, blindfold him and bring him in, he'll blow his mind. Absolutely blow his mind. It's like, why is it dark out? Why is the moon moving so fast? It's like, it's not really the moon. It's not? Think of what we could do with technology in the next 100 years, and imagine what a civilization could do with 1,000 years, what they could do. I mean, what are we up to, 8K televisions? That's nothing compared to the engineering skills of, what's flying around out there. Sorry, I rambled.
Well, imagine with the advent of space tourism, we're going to have people that can afford to buy a seat on the on a spacecraft and and that might help, or maybe they'll have to sign waivers that they'll say that the Earth is flat. Or
the BBC already offered me a spot on Virgin Galactic if the schedule opened up, and I said, of course I would. It's never going to happen though, because again, they would make me sign a waiver. Don't think for a second that if I'm right, Virgin Galactic and Blue Horizon and SpaceX, by the way, why SpaceX has a contract now, why they are supposedly delivering people to the space station, I have no idea. They're direct competition to NASA. They're using NASA's launch pads, no idea why. Beside the point, no, they would make you sign waivers and you would not be able to talk about it at all, which is why I wouldn't be able to sign the waiver. I'd be like, look, I'm going to tell what I see up there. Nope, can't do that. Why not? Well, because we say so. And they cite national security. Look, the saying is...
Did they tell you you'd have to sign a waiver?
No. We never got that far. Because honestly,
okay.
they weren't even sure.
They didn't state that yet.
Well, no, not yet. But that's because they weren't sure that Branson was going to live. And it's like, remember, Virgin Galactic blew up a lot of these things. Don't think for a second that a lot of these things that are getting blown up aren't also part of the program. You want to slow all space stuff down, which reminds me, why is nobody on the moon right now? And don't tell me that China's got a rover on the moon, Why haven't people been on the moon since 1972, if you believe the story? That's a long, 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 long time. And there's supposedly six countries with launch capability right now. Six countries. Nobody's bothered to go there. Why isn't China up there? Why aren't there people walking around? And I had an argument with a science person, and I know what your answer is going to be. I go, when you going, right? And she looked at me with the most honest, sincere eyes, like, we're going soon. I go, yeah, I've heard that. Every president since Reagan has said that. Every president has said it. Clinton, Obama, both Bushes say, oh, yeah, we're committed to going back to the moon. It's like, when? It's just the kick the can down the road. But, again, the general public, not picking on them because most of them are mouth-breathing troglodytes. They don't know anybody. You could tell people in the street, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, did you know there's a base on the moon? 30% of them would say yes right away. It's like, oh, yeah, absolutely knew that. Sorry, get worked up.
Okay. I want to make a comment. This is Dr. John. I want to make a comment about the discussion that we've had tonight. We have some smart people on this podcast who have very differing opinions. And I'm going to throw one more out, and I'm going to tell you that we must live in a universe of different possibilities and different realities because of two things. Okay, going back to my book, Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, actually three things. Number one, I prove that Edvard Munch's great painting, The Scream, is a painting of a gray. It's a painting of a UFO guy. And it's 4 feet, 3 inches tall using some geometry. And I think that's very interesting. You know, this is something from the 1880s in any time frame, you know, that there were grays that they had seen, number one. Number two, we've got don't everybody laugh at me. Have you ever heard of the phrase the man in the moon? Okay, I'm gonna ask everybody individually. Robin, have you heard of the phrase the man in the moon?
Yes.
Trey, have you heard of the phrase?
I don't know that much about it.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Keith, I'm sorry, I always call you Kevin. Keith, have you heard of the phrase the man in the moon?
Yes.
Okay. Steve Logan, professor of wrestling, have you heard of the phrase the man in the moon?
No. Sorry.
You there? Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking.
You've heard of the phrase the man in the moon. What I can tell you is in Frank Capra's great movie, It's a Wonderful Life, the girl paints Jimmy Stewart a poster, and it shows the picture of a face of a man in the moon. When I grew up, there was a very exaggerated face that appeared on the moon. The face is gone now, and I have asked a number of people who are much, much older than me, and they all remember it. And when I ask them, where is it? Then they go out and look at it. They say, oh, my God, it's changed. It has changed. So when we see that things are changing, we can't explain why. We have differing opinions that have many merits in their discussion. It just opens up the possibility that we've got a very wonderful world, and we've got many crazy things that are happening at the same time. I mean, Trey is 100% right. Mark Sargent has got some very good arguments. Keith has got some good arguments. Steve Logan has got some good arguments. Robin has some good arguments. And I believe that this goes to show that we live in a wonderful world. And we have lots of differing arguments to explain the same thing. I don't know why. If someone can explain that to me, then they can explain everything in the world. But we have different arguments to explain the same thing. And I think Scary Cast has shown tonight that we live in a wonderful world. And Trey is 100% right with some of his arguments. When I say arguments, some of his stories about what has happened and how scientists have measured the circumference of the Earth. I mean, that's wonderful. Mark Sargent has made some compelling arguments about what in the heck is going on. Robin says she's not really sure, but there's a little bit of voodoo going on. Robin, would that be the correct thing to say? There's a little bit of voodoo somehow, somewhere about everything. What do you think? Is that a good
way to put it? Well, I just think that there's just not any truth that's been put out there at all.
Okay. Well, we've proven tonight that there are compelling arguments for lots of things. And I want to thank everybody that came on here tonight, because we have one of the largest collections of smart people in the universe, or at least one of the smartest collections of people in the United States that are on here tonight. And we've proven that you can't explain everything away with the same thing. We've all got different views, and we can all explain things differently. And so I think
I don't ever discredit anybody's thoughts.
Right, and it might be worthwhile. I would like to speak with each one of you individually in the next week or two, and I would like to reconvene this panel in a month or two, and let's talk again. And I think it's good that we've all got differing opinions, but they're all leading to the same thing, is that the world is a wide open, crazy place. So, I mean, I got to say thank you to everybody who has participated. And, Keith, you've got another couple of things that we want to touch on next time that you told me that you had been doing some research, and I want to really be well-versed in it so that we can give everybody their opportunity to talk about some of these great things. So I'm not passing the buck. I'm just saying let's do some research, let's talk more, and see if we can maybe reconcile the things that we've discussed and go from there. So I want to say, first of all, thank you to everybody on ScaryCast. I knew this was going to be an episode for the ages, and it certainly was. I want to thank our guest.
Hey, John.
Mark. Yes. Keith?
Can you name the two documentaries that I was talking about for the viewers, so they can have an opportunity to
Why don't you tell that, and then I will post them on the website or on Facebook right after the show is over. So tell us the names of those two, and that'll get some of us started in some additional research. Okay.
Yeah. So the first documentary is called What on Earth Happened. I haven't finished this documentary. It's 8 hours long. And the second one is called The Lost History of Earth. And this one's about 5 hours long. So these are documentaries that talk about flat Earth and the history. They also talk a little bit about the Illuminati and secret societies and things like that. And they go into some other dark topics too. But I mean, just go into it with an open mind, and you'll learn some interesting things in them.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and if you'll text those to me or whatever, I will make sure that those go up on the ScaryCast website, number one. Number two, Mark Sargent, will you come back and talk with us?
Sure.
I've enjoyed it. I have been thrilled at the discussion. We've had a lot of interesting thoughts, and I think this group in particular can come to some, or at least can come to a consensus of what's going on with everything. Dr. Trey Donaway, thank you for your clarity and your scientist. You're a learned man. You are our Surgeon General, and we appreciate everything that you've had to say, because everything you've said has been great. So thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Nice to be with
you. Well, great. Keith, thank you for being with us. We're going to get more of the information that you've got. Robin McCray, I'm going to talk with you about some exercises and some things that maybe we can explore with remote viewing, and we can see if we can get to the bottom of this, because I bet we
can. Sounds good.
Because we're all smart people. Professor Wrestling, Steve Logan, thank you for being with us. Really appreciate having you on. So I want to say thank you very much to everybody who was on our show tonight, and at least we have lots more questions than we have answers, because if we don't keep generating questions, we'll never go anywhere. So I wanted to say thank you to everybody. We'll see you next week. Now, next week we have got a very, very interesting guest. He is let me go find his name here. Here he is. His name is Michael St. Lawrence of the St. Lawrence Agency, and he sells alien abduction insurance. Now, he tells me that he's been examined by the Department of Insurance in many states, including Texas and Florida, which are some of the toughest ones. And he says, well, John, you know, it's a kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing to be able to offer alien abduction insurance. You have to, first of all, prove it. And number two, it's a $10 million policy payable at $1 a year for 10 million years. But he is such an entertaining guy. I met him today, and I said, would you please come on ScaryCast and talk to us about this? And I think it raises many, many interesting questions. It does. I've seen an interview with him on Fox News Channel 13 down in Tampa, Florida. And it was a really good interview. It's thought-provoking. And alien abductions are something that we're going to have to live with because we're still going to hear about them. So next week we will have alien abduction insurance, and I hope it's not too crazy for everybody, but we've had fun. And I think we've learned a lot. We've learned that there are different opinions and different ways of viewing the world. So this is Dr. John Stamey, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to everybody that has been on this show. It's been absolutely a blast. So we will see you next week, 9 p.m. Monday night. And you can also listen to us on tigerradio.com, WLSC, AM and FM in Loras and Myrtle Beach for ScaryCast. And you can hear, again, Mark Sargent's great talk and the great arguments by Dr. Trey Donaway, Robin McCray, Professor Wrestling, Steve Logan, and of course, Keith Podesti. So we've had a great time tonight. We'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Have a great week, and we'll see you then. Take care.
Bye.
Good night.
See ya.
Bye.
Au revoir.